Now on the rundown, we feature a discussion with Richard Markosian, the founder and publisher of the magazine Utah Stories. I visited Markosian in the offices of Utah Stories and spoke with him about the viability of print journalism, about his thoughts on mainstream media, and about contributing to Utah's local economy. So I'm here with Richard Markosian, the founder and publisher of Utah Stories. The first question I'm going to ask you is to tell us a little bit about what you do here, what Utah Stories is, why you do it, and how it got started.
Yeah, to start with the last part of your question, how it got started, I couldn't decide what I wanted to study at the University of Utah, so I did a degree customization. I'm interested in a lot of different things, and so I studied journalism and filmmaking. And basically I did that with the hope that I'd become a documentary filmmaker. And I found that the format of the documentary film would take like 1 to 2 years to make a film. You'd have to beg people for funding. So I got a little disenchanted with it with my first attempt, and I decided that I would try to do mini documentaries online in video format. And I got the domain name Utah Stories, started publishing these videos, and basically the videos were about just asking tough questions. And my first question was, why are we tearing down malls that were built 30 years ago to build a new center? And why is architecture downtown only good for 30 to 35 years these days? Because I didn't see that question being asked by the mainstream media. I saw it as being a pertinent question. So I started to talk to small business owners about what they thought about downtown Salt Lake City and the policies that were going on. Tony Weller, Weller Books, John Spiros, Lamb's Restaurant, Utah Woolen Mills, 100-year-old business, they all had a really similar opinion, which was the downtown political leaders were just ignoring their opinions. And it's just a whole litany of things. The downtown beautification projects of 1973, 1976, tracks construction before the Olympics. Nobody was helping these people during construction efforts. There were a whole bunch of locally run and operated long-standing department stores. Those were completely killed off by the malls being enticed to locate into ZCMI Center and Crossroads. Auerbach's and Paris Company were both around almost 100 years. And
I'm wondering, though, if some of that you can chalk up to poor historical decisions in, say, the 60s and 70s, but have we learned from those mistakes?
I think to an extent we're learning, but to a greater extent, history is simply repeating itself. The way that the City Creek Center is being operated, they are doing exactly the same mistakes that the Crossroads Mall made 35 years ago. They're doing everything they can to entice, to bring all the big chain stores into the City Creek Center, and they're giving them free rent. The Apple Store has free rent for reportedly the next 7 years, and they're doing things to get places like the Brooks Brothers in. Nordstrom has free rent. And they don't realize that this actually comes at a pretty great cost, because if you were Utah Woolen Mills, you've been around 100 years, and you're supposed to compete against Nordstrom, who's got free rent, that's not a level playing field. That's not what I would consider a free market. I mean, that's corporations getting handouts and welfare at the expense of the local business owners.
When did you start publishing the physical, and when did you start online?
So I started part-time in 2006. It wasn't until 2008 that I decided to just stop everything else I was doing and do Utah Stories full-time. I was actually making really pretty good money as a programmer, and I do graphic design too, and I had plenty of clients, a lot of work, but I thought, this is what I really would like to do. This is my experiment, and I want to try it for a year, and maybe it'll fail, but at least I'll learn something from it. And so I just decided to give everything else up and just started writing stories. I hired a little staff. We had 3 writers. We were online only our first year. I thought we could just do it online, and that was my hope, but all of our advertisers valued much more our little pamphlet we were using to promote the online and their little ad in that pamphlet more than their banner online. And really, when you look at print, there is no better way to get out a message and an ad to a small geographic area than print. I mean, really, still, online cannot compete with printing 25,000 copies and distributing 75% of those in a small geographic area. And I think we're getting out to an audience who really appreciates the local businesses. They go and patronize them. They know by patronizing them and mentioning us, they're helping us, they're helping them. And it's a neat thing to see.
I know that your magazine also doesn't accept advertising from non-local sources. Is that correct?
Yeah, if it is a locally owned and operated franchise, we're okay with that. But we stay true to our mission that we are a voice for local Utah. That is our niche. That's where we found our place in the media. We're happily non-mainstream. We ask questions that other media outlets typically aren't going to ask. And I think to remain true to that, we can't allow, Nordstrom's to advertise, because I think that would kind of slant our coverage and kind of run contrary to our values.
And so that leads me into another question. You've been a critic of the mainstream media, and I'm curious about, if you wouldn't mind describing for our listening audience, what some of the things that you take issue with, examples of things that the mainstream media misses.
Well, what I found in reading the newspapers growing up is it used to be that coverage was very local. You'd have in-depth coverage of city council, of community meetings. You'd have a lot of stories about people who were just working their butts off doing what they loved. Those were my favorite kind of stories. And I think that more and more the local coverage is dying, and they're filling up the newspapers with more wire service stories. Local television news is so super sensationalized about accidents, about horrific things going on. It makes you think that the world is just a terrible place to live in. You'll see occasionally human interest stories and feel-good stories, but they're rarely asking anything meaningful, in-depth, anything that really is going to affect people's lives. And I think that the marketplace kind of mirrors the media coverage, because the marketplace is much more nationalized, corporate, you see the same thing with our media. And I think that if you are focused on local issues, not only do people get a greater sense of place in their community, but you promote these local businesses to readers, and you point out the economic impact that these local businesses have, and you find that you can actually have a more vibrant local economy, which everybody benefits from.
And so what is that local benefit? I mean, is it about money staying inside of the local area?
It's like when you go to McDonald's and you buy your $5 value meal, all the profits of that value meal are going to Wall Street shareholders. But if you go to Millie's Burgers and buy their $5 combo meal, those profits are staying in the local economy. He's going to recirculate those profits inside of our economy. And so rather than people basically getting paid $7 an hour in a minimum wage job, you've got a model where a person can pay a little bit more, have a better relationship with employees, and also redistribute profits inside the local economy. And it's a huge difference.
So let's turn to the magazine itself for a second. You found some pretty out-of-the-way stuff, and I'm wondering if you have stories that come to mind when I ask you for a favorite story that you've published.
Yeah, there's been over 300, but I thought of one walking to work this morning. I ran across a 96-year-old woman who was walking, and she was, we were doing a segment called The Visible People, and it's just, we had noticed that you see more people walking around and around on their bikes, and was wondering, who are these people? What are they doing? So I stopped and interviewed this lady, and it turned out she had this incredible story about how she was staying at a care center up on South Temple, and they were robbing her blind. They were taking all her silverware. She had nobody to tell about it. Her kids weren't in the picture. She'd show up, she'd leave her apartment, come back, a whole lot of her things were gone, disappearing. And and this was a story that I was just like amazed by. I said, "Have you tried calling the police?" And they're like, "Yeah, they just tell police I'm crazy. I'm getting dementia and I don't know what I'm talking about." And I just thought, man, and this is something that probably never would have been reported or even heard about had I not just like asked this lady to tell me her story.
You know, it makes you wonder how often occurrences like that go unnoticed.
Yeah.
You've written about something that you call debugging society, and it comes from your experience as a programmer and then moving into publishing. Tell me what debugging society is.
Well, what I believe that the best role of the media is in society is examining politics, politicians, issues, asking questions, and basically finding problems that exist, that holes where money is being spent and wasted, and at taxpayers' expense. And if the media serves this role, then the benefit is that political systems and bad politicians and bad policies can be found and debugged, taken out. And I think that rarely does this happen anymore in the media. And I would love to be a part of seeing more of it happen. I'd love to have more of our questions be hard-hitting, in-depth investigations. We've launched an investigation section to the magazine where all we're doing is asking tough questions and working as hard as we can to find answers. And in our September issue coming up, we've got a really interesting in-depth look into UTA, tracks, transit, the whole model, and how is it going to pan out long term, and is it going to be a benefit eventually for taxpayers?
Well, we'll have to wait for the answer probably in September. Another question that I had is, I'm thinking about it, we seem to have touched on a number of things where I hear your displeasure with the way the world is when it comes to mainstream media, when it comes to certain things. But I'm wondering about in our own community, do you see positive movement that you are happy to see and you're supportive of?
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, Utah Stories was a total experiment. I mean, I don't think any bank would ever give money to this business model because our idea was to bring back something that everybody says is dying. Local coverage is dying. Print is dying. We found that to not be the case at all. And I think really thanks to the farmers market handing out hundreds of copies of the magazine there when we started nearly 4.5 years ago, we gained a readership who was interested. We gained a captive audience. And the farmers market is such a great thing for the community because it's a way that these local farmers who are working so hard to keep their family farms alive are able to get their products right out to a public who really values not only local but fresh, high quality produce. And I think the pendulum is swinging back towards local. I think we got so far away from people embracing their own local community and being obsessed with getting every single chain store possible in their communities, that I think it's coming back and more people are starting to value their communities and shopping local, buying local, and understanding the value of that.
How can people find the magazine? Where does it show up and how can they find you online?
It's 850 locations now all along the Wasatch Front. We're all over downtown. We have two little kiosks where we have A-frame signs with a metal box attached, one on Main Street, one out in front of the Salt Palace. We've got one of those in Sugar House. We've got another one on 3rd South, 5th East in front of our offices. And those are always full. It tends to run out pretty quickly in busy restaurants, but we try to keep these little kiosk things we've got full all the time. So.
Well, it's enviable that you wanted to do a year and you're still going and that you're following your passion here. So thanks for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That was Richard Markosian, founder and publisher of Utah Stories. You can hear this interview and all of the conversations we feature on the program at our website, kcpw.org. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back. And that's full time for the rundown today. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the program, tune in for a conversation with Ballet West Artistic Director Adam Skloot and a look at the ballet company's 50 years in Salt Lake City. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.